is Mildred J. Menlo. With my partner, Ruth Weiner, we are interviewing Erwin Goldberg, the Pittsburgh Section, National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History, on July 25th at the home of Ruth Weiner. Mr. Goldberg, we are going to start with your family background, as I had suggested to you. Would you go ahead and tell us something about yourself?
My name is Erwin Goldberg. I was born in the city of Pittsburgh in December of 1925. I'm one of four children. I have three older sisters who are living in California. Their names are Sally, Rose, and Pat. I had an older brother who died in childbirth, who was the oldest in the family. My mother and father are both immigrants. They both came from Russia around the turn of the century.
From where in Russia?
My mother came from a little town outside of Kiev, and I do not know where my father came from. They came in the, as I say, around 1905. Originally, we lived in the Hill District for a period of some years, I would say, until about 1928 or 30.
They were married when they came here?
No, my mother came to Philadelphia, where she had a brother and a sister, and she met her husband in Philadelphia, as I understand it, and they were married in Pittsburgh. I'd have to get back pretty far, let me think. I'd say shortly after she arrived in this country, so I would say probably about 1908. She came in 1905. All of the children were born in Pittsburgh, and we had relatives in Pittsburgh, some aunts and uncles, both in Pittsburgh, Reading, Lancaster, and Philadelphia. At the present time, I have a couple of cousins who still live in the city of Pittsburgh. Most of the family has passed on, although there are some relatives in Philadelphia and in Lancaster. But I know very little about the family since I was the youngest. Kind of all happened as I was before I was really fully grown. And my mother died in 1957. She was divorced from my father when I was about, 5 years old. That was 60 years ago. That was 59 years ago. She never remarried. She died in Pittsburgh.
Did she do anything after she was divorced?
No. She lived, initially I lived with her, my three sisters having gotten married, one of them having initially moved to San Francisco, and then my two other sisters moved to Los Angeles, and all three of them wound up in Los Angeles. So I lived with her for a while before and during the time that I was in the service. Came back from the service in 1946. I lived with her for about a year and a half until I got married. And then she lived by herself in Oakland. We moved from the Hill District to Oakland. And she lived there all of her life, that is, the remaining part of her life. And when I got married, fundamentally, first wife and I lived and grew up in Squirrel Hill. Subsequently, lived either there or in Queen Breeze. I was divorced in about 1975, as I recall, and have recently remarried. We're living over on the edge of, I guess you'd call it, Point Bridge, right near the shady side of Junior School, next to Frick Park. My second wife was also divorced. She, by the way, was married to a pathologist. For a number of years, she has Joan. She has two boys, one of whom is just went to work as a full-time anesthesiologist at the B. Women's Hospital. The other is fundamentally a bond broker in Houston, Texas. My three children, by education and training, I'm a certified public accountant. And subsequently, as I can tell you later on, I got into healthcare administration. My daughter is a certified public accountant. And she and her husband, who is a certified public accountant, live in San Francisco. They met in Los Angeles and got married and moved to San Francisco. My one son, the younger son, his name is Robert, lives in Washington, D.C. He initially was in political science and political education. A few years ago, decided to make a career change, and he is in healthcare administration. He's an assistant administrator at the George Washington University Hospital in Washington, D.C. My other son, the oldest son, his name is Gary, lives in Pittsburgh. He's an attorney, and he's married to a woman whose name is Beth. She's a computer specialist. Actually is working at the United Jewish Federation in their data processing activities.
Your daughter's name is?
Carol.
And, how old are your children?
My oldest son is 39. The next son is 30, going to be 38. So he's 37. Daughter is 26, I was thinking it was June, it was July. She's 33.
Do any of them have any children?
Yes, my daughter has a 2-year-old daughter. My son Robert in Washington has a 2-year-old daughter. My son in Pittsburgh has a 3-year-old son, and he and his wife, by her first marriage, have a 14-year-old boy. My wife's children, the oldest, the anesthesiologist, is just getting married next month. And the other son, his name is David. Her youngest son, his name is Robert. He's in Houston, and they have a 2-year-old boy. That's almost all.
Fun that children have together, all the same ages.
Yes, excepting for the one who's 14, right?
They're
all 2 and 3. A little bit.
Tell us something about your years growing up in the Hill District. Where did you go to school?
Well, I didn't go to school in the Hill District because we moved out of the Hill District before I went to kindergarten. My sisters, I think, went to Miller School and Fifth Avenue High School. When we moved to Oakland, I went to home school, which was a primary grade school, and then I graduated from Shenley High School. And then when I returned from the service, I went to the University of Pittsburgh and graduated from there. And during my tenure in healthcare administration, I then went back to school part-time and got a master's in public health at the University of Pittsburgh.
As you were growing up, did you have any connections in the community, the Y, the synagogue, or anything of that sort?
Well, my mother used to belong to the Niagara Street Shul, which was in Oakland. I was, as I had indicated before you came, athletically inclined, and grew up with a close group of young Jewish boys, all who lived in Oakland. So we played all of the sports you usually play, but in particular, we used to play basketball at the YMWHA down on Belfield Avenue, and continued to do that over the years, even after we came back from the service. So my connection was mostly with the Y, and as my children grew up, they also, were the Jewish Community Center. My sisters didn't have a great deal of connection here because when my mother was living alone, they pretty much supported her. They all worked and they were all married. And then they all moved out to California, so they had very little interaction in the Jewish community of Pittsburgh. I think I was the only one. When my three sisters moved out to California, my mother had no intention of moving to California. So I stayed with her. I guess I was kind of a father image for the whole family. And stayed, as I say, initially with her, and then she lived in Oakland and I lived in Squirrel Hill, and we communicated that way until her death in 1957.
Your home life at that time, was there any particular religious direction?
Well, my mother was conservative, I would say. I think she was somewhere between conservative and orthodox. She kept a kosher house. She went to services. I was bar mitzvahed at the Ward Street Shul, which is right across the street from where home school used to be.
Ward Street? I didn't know that one, the Ward Street Shul.
There was a shul right across the street from home school. In fact, my close friend lived in the house that was immediately in front of the shul. In any event, once I was bar mitzvahed, I didn't have a close religious relationship. I was too busy working hard. And so I never grew up practicing orthodoxy. If anything, I was a reformed. When I was first married, my first wife and I belonged to Temple Sinai. We were living in Squirrel Hill. And of course we went through all the things you could go through. The children went to Sunday school there, and the boys were bar mitzvahed there, and my daughter was bas mitzvahed there. But it was not a very sincerely devout or religious kind of an atmosphere. My mother did as much as she could, but just one of those things.
Economically, it was a deprived family.
Yeah,
we were a
poor family. Both when we were in the Hill and when we started out in Oakland, and of course with my three sisters and I, we fundamentally improved a lot of the family so that once we all began to pursue our own careers, we weren't a poor family, we were a middle-income family until I really got into both my career as a certified public accountant and in healthcare. And from that point on, I was always in the upper middle income level, and we didn't have any problems maintaining ourselves at all. That's never been a problem for us, and nor has it been for my three sisters. But we grew up in a very poor family. Initially, when we were in the Hill District, where my mother was by herself, quite honestly, I think she went on welfare initially until my sisters were old enough to go to work and support her.
You did not have a contact with your father after the divorce?
I don't know how long you want me to talk. That's an interesting story. He was a maverick and literally became a convert and became to proselytize.
Convert to what?
To the Methodist religion as a result of a convert who lived in the Hill District with whom he became friendly. And he actually became a missionary and moved to Texas and remarried and had two children. And imagine what that did for my mother, who was a very devout person. That was a very traumatic period of her life and our lives. So my father left the house when I was about 5 years old, during my one sister, one of my sisters maintained contact with him over the years. And on a number of occasions, he attempted to contact me, particularly when I was in service, to try and reestablish a relationship. But that was such a traumatic event for my mother and for me that I had no interest in pursuing it. So although he wrote and tried to contact me through my sister, I never really had a relationship. I tell you, a one-minute anecdote that was one of the most unusual things that ever happened to me. It's probably not important to this, but it's just an interesting story.
Excuse me. Let's make sure his voice is
coming. He tried to contact me and on occasion wrote me letters that I just never responded to. 10 years after he died, one day I received an envelope in the mail from the post office in Selma City, Texas, which is where he had lived. And they had been building a new post office and tore down the old post office. And apparently, in their letter chute, some of the letters had fallen behind the chute. So when they tore the building down, they found letters. And they forwarded a letter on to me, which happened to be from my father. And it talked about, you know, how bygones should be bygones. He was dying of cancer. He wanted to reestablish this relationship, et cetera, et cetera. When I finished reading the letter, it was like a voice from out of the grave. It had happened 10 years previously. It was a very unusual experience. I'm not sure that it was moving because I had kind of closed off my whole feelings towards him because I just didn't want to resume the relationship at all since he hadn't treated my mother very well and I had a very close relationship with him.
That's understandable.
What else can I tell you?
How about some names? Your father's name?
Samuel.
And your mother's?
Celia. And my the oldest in the family, who, as I say, was a boy who died, I think, before the age of about two, was Simon.
His what?
Simon.
Simon. And your sister's?
I think I gave
it's
a...
Sally Rose.
Right.
Yeah.
I still have two cousins, as I say, who live in the city. One of them is Charlotte Finkelstein. And another is Betty Ostrom. Have some relatives, and a third is Sophie Goldstein. I have some, still have an aunt and uncle, as I recall, in Philadelphia, but just because of our backgrounds, I never had a close relationship with any of those, my relatives in Philadelphia.
As you grew up, were there any special friends?
I had some close personal friends. My one close friend in particular is a fellow whose name is Morton Aronson. He and I grew up together. We were each other's best men. We were each other's godfathers for our first children. We're still very close. We had a club that was a social club, but it was primarily a basketball club. We met at the Y. Initially, our name was the Spartans because that was Shenley High School's logo name. And then one of our friends who was part of the club, who was in the service, was killed. He was in the Air Force. And so his name was Zola Cohen. He lived on Dawson Street in Oakland. And out of his memory, we changed the name of the club to the Zola Cohen Club. And it had about a dozen fellows in it. We were all married. We all had children. And so in addition to playing basketball, we had a lot of social interaction because we all lived in about the same place. But as you know, as they grew up, people moved out and moved on. Some moved out of town. And the number is not considerable. I'd say probably five or six of us left. Interestingly enough, with my own background, I was always involved in public matters, whether it was through public accounting or whether it was through the hospital. I was a very loner type person. I did not have a large number of social relationships, because most of my time was spent in other kinds of quasi-business social relationships. So I guess I used my time with my family.
Any special teachers with whom you had any particular relationship or who had any special influence in your life?
Well, I went to Shenley High School, and it was an excellent high school. It, as you know, was a totally integrated high school. It was about 50% black. Even then, I graduated in 1943. It was a very worthwhile experience because it taught me at a very early age how to respect the rights of others and to accept integration, etc., etc. The teachers in the school were excellent teachers, particularly the English teachers, and some of them I'll remember, both in grade school and high school, because they were very disciplined in the way in which they taught. And so they were, some of them were Miss Malik, and in grade school, a woman by the name of Miss Evansberger, who probably taught me more about English than I ever do, even to this day. College, when I went to the University of Pittsburgh, there was an accounting professor who was an outstanding professor. I stayed in contact with him for many years, and interestingly enough, when I had to sit for a fellowship examination to become a fellow in this national group, I was tested at the university, and they told me that I should take the papers and contact the university, and I would be given a test on a Saturday. And my old college accounting professor was the person whose office it was in. His name was James Russell. He just retired from the university, and again was an outstanding accounting professor. I think those were the people who probably had the most educational impact. Well, it was an interesting thing because I never thought I would be able to go to college when I was in high school because of our financial status. When I was in high school, then I took shorthand and typing. I thought that I could become a mail secretary and that would give me a livelihood. When I went into the service, I became a radioman because I knew how to type. And I was a radioman during the service. When I came out of the service, I had the GI Bill, and I was always a numbers person. In high school, because I took business courses, I was always good at bookkeeping and accounting and things of that nature. So that when I decided, and in fact, what, interestingly enough, you'll recall this, it's like the last day we were in high school. We were in an English class, and the English teacher asked us to stand up and tell everybody what we expected to do in our lives. It was interesting because I said I intended to enlist in the Navy, which I did. I didn't want to be drafted into the Army. And after I came out, I was going to become an accountant and try to become a certified public accountant, which in fact is what happened. In any event, I lost my train of thought for the moment.
Oh, I'm sorry. You were talking about the courses you were taking.
Oh, so in any event, when I came back from the service, I went to the University of Pittsburgh on the GI Bill, worked in an accounting office while I was going through school. Then you got through school in a hurry. It took me about 2.5 years because I went to summer school every year and worked as an accountant. And so that took place from 1946 to 1949. And when I got out of school, because I had worked during college, I was eligible to sit for the CPA exam. You need experience, I said, before you could sit. And I passed the exam in 1949 at the young age of 23. And so I had a CPA degree. But no gray hair and no experience. It was
a job.
I had a job, and I was married.
And when did you marry?
Married in 1947.
While you were in school.
Yes, while I was in school. My wife actually worked at the YMWHA. That's how I met her. She worked while we were while I was in school.
What was her name?
Elaine.
Elaine? What?
Goldberg. Andrew Goldberg. Her father was William Ivory, a very active in the Jewish War veteran. Was a tip staff to Judge Benjamin Wexler. in any event, we had our first child in 1951, at which point she obviously stopped working and raised a family. Worked as a certified public accountant for... I went to work for two different public accounting firms after I was certified. One I had been working with all during college. The second...
Which was?
Philip Strohl, S-T-R-O-H-L. He was a Jewish accountant, actually in the Iroquois building. I had an opportunity to go to work for another accountant who said that he was looking for somebody who would become a partner. So I went to work for a fellow whose name was Isidore Kantrowitz. And it was clear to me after about a year or so that we were not going to develop a long-term relationship. I had done work, well, let me say, I was contacted by the predecessor company to Touche Ross, Deloitte Touche, which was Bacharach Sandbecking Company. They were the accountants for Montefiore Hospital, and they were looking for a controller. And somebody, and I don't know who, had suggested that they contact me. So they contacted me in 1951 and asked me if I might be interested in going to work in a hospital. Since my son had just been born, or my wife was pregnant at the time, I decided that I needed more income, and this was a significant improvement over my prior salary. So I went out to the hospital, was interviewed, and went to work for the hospital as the controller in 1951. I worked as controller and then became an assistant administrator to my predecessor, who worked with him for 10 years, and then at the end of 1961, having this experience and having become an administrator, I became the director of the December of 1961, and I was the director of the hospital from December of 1961 until fundamentally March of this year. Well, actually, I guess about January 1st of 1989, when I brought in somebody to replace me as the president of the hospital. And I became the vice chairman for corporate development. We thought we were going to go out on a fundraising campaign. So I was the vice chairman for corporate development for about 15 months. And in the interim, this whole transaction with Presbyterian Hospital arose. And so I finished my employment with the hospital in March of this year.
Let's get back to your home. Your children were born when?
My one oldest son was born in May of 1951.
What is his name?
Gary Lee. My second son was born in September of 1952, Robert J. My daughter was born in 1957, June of 1957, Carol Ann.
What were some of the customs set up in your home? You said you did not have a religious life when you were growing up. Did that change in your home when you were married and had children of your own?
Not really, because we became part of the Reformed Temple. Although we did go to services on Friday evenings, we were not deeply involved in the religious life of the temple. I belonged to the men's club, my wife belonged to the sisterhood, but we were not what I would call very active participants, although my wife's parents were very active at the temple and were deeply involved in their activities. But I guess because I didn't have much of a religious background, we just were not that deeply involved, although we did the things, I guess, that most families do in terms of raising our children. They went to Sunday school and got religious training. I have to say that my oldest son they belong to Temple Sinai and go to services. My middle son does not. He is married to a Jewish woman, but they're not very deeply involved in practicing their religion. My daughter is married to a non-Jew in San Francisco, and she obviously for that reason they're not deeply involved. My second marriage is to a non-Jew.
End of side one, continued on side two.